my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me the hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Hey everyone, welcome to this special later edition of my 1-2-3 cents the podcast. As many of you who listen know, on a regular basis, this show drops on Monday mornings, but because of my weird work schedule, I've talked about it before. Anyway, I wasn't able to watch all of SummerSlam Sunday night, so Chad and I are recording this podcast Monday afternoon in the wake of SummerSlam, and of course before Raw happens. So we're going to just kind of offer our opinions, offer our 1-2-3 cents on what happened on not just SummerSlam, but as well as NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn. And I'm not sure, I didn't really talk to Chad in the pre-show before we get into this, Chad, but we're not going to necessarily critique the matches for, you know, work rate quality and whatnot. But we're going to talk more about, or at least what I'm planning to talk more about, is storylines and kind of things making sense and how things kind of worked out throughout the evening. So I'm going to let you kind of start it off because I did watch most of the show. I'd say I watched 90% of the show, but I did miss the open with Jon Stewart. And I know that you had texted me and said that this was kind of a brutal start to the show.
Comedy. I don't know if you've read the recap. Stewart comes out, talks about hosting and wanting to confront Brock Lesnar because he was mad that Lesnar, ended the streak at WrestleMania. But he didn't want to do it alone, so he called in his good friend Mick Foley to come with him, and he brought out Mick. And Mick was like, I didn't understand what you were saying. I thought you said Brock. I didn't hear the B. I don't want to confront Brock. Hell in a Cell match was 17 years ago. I'm old now. And that was basically it. And it was just, it wasn't funny. It was one of those, to me, it was an example of why SummerSlam didn't need to be 4 hours long. You could have easily chopped that out and nothing would have been missed. But that's my own personal opinion. I'm not a huge Jon Stewart fan, so maybe that might color my bias a little bit, but yeah, I thought the opening was very unnecessary.
And we'll get to more on Jon Stewart in a second. Obviously, if you've seen the show, which I'm assuming most of you have already seen it, but opening the pay-per-view, or opening this event with Sheamus and Randy Orton, kind of almost comical. We talked about it on between texting during the show. This was the match that got kind of heckled during the Raw after WrestleMania 29 in New Jersey. So it was kind of interesting they went this way.
Well, and the original venue for SummerSlam this year was the Songhees Center, which is the same venue of Raw after WrestleMania 29. Unfortunately, it closed down a few months ago, and so they had to scramble and move SummerSlam into the Barclays Center. The perverse person in me would have really liked to have seen that match happen again in the Songhees Center, just to see if the crowd would have had the same reaction. And I know, for a little bit, they did try to not hijack in the same way, but they were doing the Olay chant and I think doing a couple other chants during the match that had nothing to do with either Sheamus or Orton. And yeah, I don't know whose idea it was to have this match again, but Sheamus and Orton should never be in a match together for the rest of the time that they're in WWE, because no one apparently cares about either man.
We'll leave it at that. Well said. In my opinion, all is right in the world now that the New Day is once again WWE Tag Team Champions. I thought it was a bad idea taking the belts off of them in the first place. And this was kind of a, you know, it was the four-man or four-team. Was it an elimination match? I missed all but the end of this one. Was this elimination or was this winner-take-all?
Winner-take-all.
Okay, so, you know, I don't dislike the primetime players, but I think of the four teams that were in this, New Day can get the most mileage out of a tag team title run, and hopefully we'll get some new tag teams going as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't dislike the primetime players. I actually enjoy them. It's just that even when they had the titles, how much did you hear from them? And this is, I mean, I think this is a problem spanning the entirety of WWE, is there are only select people who get mic time. And granted, whenever New Day is in a match, Xavier Woods is going to get as much mic time as he can get during the match, because he's just going to be talking nonstop, yelling, and you're going to hear him no matter what. But I think New Day winning it, you know, they are probably the most over tag team at the moment, but that's because WWE hasn't really done much with the other tag teams. And New Day have character and charisma. But I was really impressed in this match by the Lucha Dragons. This was probably the first match of theirs that I've seen that made me want to see more out of them. Overall, I thought this was a very entertaining match. And yeah, I'm glad New Day won, because that victory celebration is probably one of the best things I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, they definitely know how to work the crowd, that is for sure. Rusev versus Dolph Ziggler was next, and I don't know. I thought that it was a good match. I did like some of the things that Rusev does for a big guy. Obviously, though, things just haven't been the same since he and Lana split. And I don't know that I like the Lana-Dolph Ziggler pairing.
For me, this was kind of the epitome of everything that is wrong with WWE right now. Because both Rusev and Ziggler are good talents, but I had no interest in this match whatsoever. Ziggler, after winning the world title in, you know, after the night after WrestleMania 29, after losing the title 2 months later, has kind of floundered and done nothing. The WWE has never really pushed him consistently since, and Rusev, ever since losing to Cena, has just kind of floundered. So where was my? I had no interest in this match due to I knew not getting invested in anything that these guys do, because I know for the most part it's probably not going to lead to anything better. Lana, for some reason, her idea of, I guess, becoming American is wearing a Canadian tuxedo in the all denim getup. I figure with the double count out result, this will probably lead to a match either at Night of Champions or Hell in a Cell with a mixed tag with Rusev and Summer Rae versus Lana and Dolph. But yeah, I mean, I hate to be so down on this match, but WWE hasn't given me any reason to care.
Now, there was at one point, there was a lot of speculation that the whole reason of splitting Lana and Rusev up was so Lana could kind of go at her own in the ring. And I agree with you. I do think this is going to lead to an intergender tag team match. Lana, as far as you know, she's not wrestled, at least on WWE TV. Is that right?
I believe so, yeah. Because I know she was taking... Some people were commenting either on Facebook or on Twitter to her about her lack of wrestling. And she just said, you know, kind of wait and see. But
I guess we will wait and see. The match that I was actually looking the most forward to for a couple of reasons. One, it being probably one of the freshest on the card. Actually, probably the freshest. was Stephen Amell and Neville teaming up against Stardust and King Barrett.
We all know why you were looking forward to this match.
Okay. I need to wear my Gorilla Monsoon shirt right now. Will you stop? You know, I was kind of surprised with the finish to this. I wasn't surprised that Amell and Neville won, because typically when the celebrity is involved in a match, the celebrity wins. But I was surprised that Amell didn't get the win over Stardust, which makes me wonder and think that perhaps this is not the last we've seen of Stephen Amell in Stardust.
Yeah, possibly, because you make a good point. I was impressed that, I believe, if memory serves right, Amell mainly got more, was on the receiving end more than the giving end of any beatdowns. And I know he did have the crossbody there at the end to the floor, but I was kind of impressed with how much he got beat up, because normally when a celebrity comes in, they try to make them look good and have them, be the dominant force.
Mm-hmm.
You can look back at Jay Leno beating up Hulk Hogan to see how horrible that can be at times. But Amell looked good. He, definitely didn't embarrass himself, and I thought the match was laid out well, and the ending, even with Neville beating Barrett, kind of keeps things open for Neville and Stardust to continue their feud.
Yeah, that's a good point, and we should note as well that, fans listening to this aren't saying this, obviously, because you're wrestling fans, and that's why you're listening, but to those who question the authenticity of wrestling, who call it fake or whatever, Amell does have a picture going around on social media of the abuse, I guess, if that's the right word I'm looking for, that he took. And he's got a lot of scrapes and abrasions on his back as a result of that match. And like you said, Chad, he was on the receiving end, I think, more than he was on the dishing out end of things. So, but I agree, he had a great showing, and I do think that this keeps the door open, or, opportunities down the road for Amell and Stardust, or Amell and Stardust and Neville, obviously, as well, too. So, and I apologize, I'm saying as well a lot again. But Ryback, The Big Show, and The Miz in a triple threat match for the Intercontinental Championship. I've kind of had my say on these three. I used to be a huge Mizfit, and he just kind of has fallen so far from his original, what I thought was what made him, stand out to me, that I did not care about this match at all. I could not get involved in it. And, when I finally was able to get SummerSlam loaded up on Sunday night, it was this match. And I was like, ugh, you got to be kidding me. So, Ryback, of course, retained. Some people saying that the ending to it should have been more of something The Miz would have done, kind of stealing that victory. But nonetheless, Ryback is still your Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah, I think this match helped by being relatively short. And I enjoyed The Miz's antics of trying to steal the pin, steal the win. But he just kept going back and forth, bouncing from Big Show to Ryback to Big Show, trying to get the pin. So the match was better than I expected. I actually thought there for a minute that Big Show was going to win, just because I really think WWE likes trolling their audience, and given how Big Show often gets a please retire chance now, I really thought he was going to win. But Ryback winning, yay. I'm with you. You used to be a big Misfit. I used to be a big Skipper, what I call the Skip Sheffield fans. Ryback's previous identity. But yeah, Ryback, once again, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about Dolph and Rusev, is these guys are just presented every week, but there's really no reason to care. They mm-hmm. do the same thing week after week, and it just becomes so routine and monotonous that you can easily tune out and not miss anything.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't I thought I had read somewhere that the Big Show is going to kind of transition into that, not necessarily full-on retirement, but that kind of part-time, even more so than he is now.
I don't know. I haven't seen that. I mean, he's been around now for nearly 20 years, so, you know, it makes sense, but I don't know. I have not seen that.
Okay. One of the better matches of the night, I thought, was this next one. It was the tag team match with, and I think we may kind of disagree on this, Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper against Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns, kind of the Wyatt family versus the Shield revisited from last year. And you did make some good points. I really like Dean Ambrose, though. I like all four players in this match, actually, but Dean Ambrose, to me, kind of the standout, and I really am curious to see where this group is headed next and what's up with Roman Reigns. And you had some interesting comments about this match as we were texting back and forth.
I thought this match was decent as long as Roman Reigns wasn't involved. And I know earlier this year Roman was getting a lot of criticism from fans because they felt he was kind of rushed into the main event scene. And I think since WrestleMania, he has stepped up his game. He's been really good. I could see him easily being champion now at any point. But this match last night just kind of reminded me of everything that I dislike about Roman Reigns. It seemed like the only time he was in the match was he was hitting his Superman punch or his spirit. He just devolved back into just hitting his signature moves. There was nothing else to his performance. I've been a big fan of Luke Harper since his Chikara days. Bray Wyatt, I think he's another one that WWE has kind of dropped the ball with. Dean Ambrose, I think, has that potential to be the modern-day kind of stone-cold character, but just Roman Reigns kind of dragged this match down for me.
And I did read, too, some speculation that these four may end up, and again, it's speculation, that they would be candidates for the Hell in a Cell, like the actual inside the Hell in a Cell, but we still have to get through Night of Champions, too, of course. So
it's still like eight weeks away, and if we get 8 weeks of these guys fighting, it's just by the time Hell in a Cell comes around.
Yeah.
That again, so hopefully, it was last year Dean Ambrose took on Seth Rollins and Helen Bray Wyatt interfered at the end, but.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And speaking of Seth Rollins, he, of course, is the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, defending against former champion and current United States champion John Cena in a title versus title matchup. And I got to admit, I thought that this one went, the match itself was well done. I thought that both men put on a great show. There were some moments there where you thought Cena was going to win. You thought there were some moments there where it looked like Rollins was going to win. And then probably the last minute of the match, to me, is kind of the exclamation point on what is wrong with wrestling. You mentioned, you know, TNA move with the ref bump, and then, of course, Jon Stewart coming out, who was the host. And, you know, his man, and I get that he's not a professional wrestler and he's not done this before. His mannerisms when he came to the ring, you know, I've used this cliche before, Jake the Snake Roberts circa WrestleMania 7 could see the chair shot to Cena coming.
Yeah, and I don't know if he came out too soon or if Cena stayed down too long, but that whole end sequence just dragged.
Yes. And it really kind of deflated, kind of took some of the momentum, I thought, out of the show. Because like I said, the tag team match prior to that, high-paced. The match itself, I thought, was high-paced and you know, some good action. But that whole sequence just, to me, was like, why is this happening?
Yeah, I don't know what would have been worse, the ending that they did or Cena winning. I think both killed the crowd, or would have.
Yeah.
Seth Rollins, like you said, he has put on ever since Royal Rumble, he has shown that he can hang with the top dogs and put on good matches. But for some reason, he's being booked as a not a paper champion, but just a very weak champion. Like he can't win on his own, and I think it hurts the title. It hurts his reign. And one of my big issues with Stewart coming out is there was no explanation. I guess Stewart's going to be on Raw tonight, so hopefully we'll get an explanation why. But I was thinking about this earlier today, not in this context, but in other contexts, is that whenever there's a backstage segment on Raw or at a pay-per-view, it's like everybody's in their own little vacuum. You don't see guys like walking through the background. You don't see guys mingling together. But Stewart comes out, interferes. He and Seth Rollins didn't leave. And there's no, like, none of the backstage reporters or interviewers tried to get a word with them. Even if they cut and Rollins and Stewart are getting in their limo and leaving and don't say anything, at least you attempt to follow up on the story. And you can say, like, oh, we'll tune in tomorrow on Raw. We'll explain everything. So you promote Raw. This was just, it happened, and then it was done.
Right, and hopefully there is an explanation on Raw as to why it happened, because, you know, earlier this year, of course, there was the whole Rollins and Stewart kind of feud going on between Comedy Central and Raw. So this really did kind of come out of nowhere. And
yeah, and I believe when Stewart was on Raw last time, didn't he attack Rollins?
Yeah, I think he gave him a low blow or something, yeah.
Either on the pre-show, I think it was on the pre-show last night, Stewart is talking to Cena backstage. He's like, oh, if you ever need to learn how to throw a kick to the groin or something like that. So,
and this may have been, you know, my day job is I'm a TV journalist, and today on Good Morning America, you know, there was a clip, a highlight of John Stewart whacking John Cena with a chair. So, you know, it was a 30-second mention in the mainstream media, and if the Good Morning America had it, I'm sure it was all over everywhere else as well. So, you know, and that may have just been part of what they were looking for, was some sort of, you know, publicity. You know, your number one Make-A-Wish guy got hit by the outgoing host of The Daily Show. Who knows?
But it also, I mean, I understand that logic, but when it comes at the expense of your product, is it worth it?
Right. And that's been the $64,000 question all along is, you know, obviously it's sports entertainment these days, and how much are you willing to sacrifice of your fans to satisfy that, 30-second clip on national news? You know, was it worth it? So, go ahead.
The other question is that I saw being passed around on message boards is, was that a heel turn or a face turn from Jon Stewart?
Good question. Yeah, because the crowd was kind of eating Cena's lunch. So,
I mean, I after what I said earlier about Jon Stewart, I actually now kind of like him because he prevented John Cena from winning. But I don't think John Cena is never going to win the title again. But I'm still at that point where I don't want to see John Cena win the title. So, if he never gets another title match, I will be happy.
I'm with you. I agree with that. Speaking of titles, the Divas Champion was a part of this three Diva team matchup. It was, of course, Team Bad versus PCB versus Team Bella in an elimination match. And basically, your partner gets pinned, then all the other two teammates leave. An interesting setup, an interesting concept. I maybe could have seen this happening more at a Survivor Series type thing and would have rather seen an individual one-on-one Divas Championship match here. But there's...
This is happening another 30 days.
Yeah, I guess because Nikki is nearing AJ Lee's record as Divas Champion, is that right?
Yeah, I think she's within 30 days, I believe. I don't know the exact number.
Of course, they're all talented. I don't want to say they're not, but the most talented team, I would say, won this one with Paige. Paige, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch beating the other two teams here. Do you think that this was a good way to go with the Divas, with this whole Diva revolution that's going on, especially, and we'll talk more about TakeOver here in a few minutes, but kind of following that, you know, the night after the TakeOver match between Sasha Banks and Bayley?
I am not convinced that there is a Diva revolution, at least not on the main roster. It's, yes, the Divas are getting more attention and getting longer matches, but you still have no... What was the reasoning behind this match? What is the reason for these teams? There's still no character development. The Bellas continue to flip from face to heel. This match, especially after TakeOver, was, in my opinion, a huge letdown. And the fact that Sasha Banks was, her team was eliminated first, and she didn't really get to shine after her match at TakeOver, I think as long as the Bellas are there, the Diva Revolution is going to not be the revolution that it could be. And I don't know if... This is speculation, so take it with a grain of salt, but apparently the original plan, if you read this online, was for Charlotte to come in and win the title from Nikki on her first day in, but Nikki then kind of complained, and John Cena, on her behalf, got plans changed. Again, speculation, but there's also the AJ Lee factor, and you know, WWE is petty enough to keep the title on Nikki to break that record. Paige, Charlotte, Sasha Banks, and Becky Lynch are very talented and can have incredible matches. I think the rest of the Divas that were already on the main roster are not up to that level, because I think when they came up, the training was different. And so far, I'm not fully on board with the Diva Revolution in regards to it actually being something meaningful.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair statement. Something to definitely keep an eye on, and we'll see how things go from here with it. But I thought maybe match of the night, I don't know, maybe I'm overselling it, Kevin Owens versus Cesaro. It really was, in my opinion, a great match. And I think it was a match that Owens needed to win. And the commentators kept putting over the fact of the losses that Owens has kind of come across over the last month and a half or so. So I think that beating Cesaro was a definite must-win situation kind of for him.
Yeah, I agree. It was a good match. I'll admit that I kind of had tuned out SummerSlam by this point after the Jon Stewart thing and the Divas match and the fact that the show was 4 hours long. I just, my ADD kicked in, so I was only half watching. But I think it's Cesaro and Kevin Owens. I don't think they can have a bad match with each other. But yeah, I agree. Owens needed that win. I mean, Cesaro could also have used it, but I think Owens needed it more after coming in, beating Cena, and then not winning since then. Whereas Cesaro kind of seems to be like he's getting to that point where he's kind of bulletproof with the fans. They'll be behind Tim, win or lose.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where each of these guys go next.
And let's talk about that, because I did want to bring this up as well. We got a question right before we started recording from our good friend JD at Blanchard Buzz on Twitter, asking, heading into Night of Champions, who challenges for the IC title? Owens, Sheamus, Cesaro, other. And I know you answered, and I don't know if you were tongue-in-cheek with your answer, but who do you see as kind of stepping up and challenging Ryback now that we are heading into a new pay-per-view?
I would not be surprised if it... let's see. Ryback pinned the Big Show, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so I could see Miz getting another shot. Ideally, I would want to see Cesaro or Owens or Neville. Yeah, somebody fresh, somebody new. I know Cesaro has been U.S. champion before, but But unfortunately, with the way WWE books, I could see a continuation of the Ryback, Miz, Big Show feud continuing into another match.
Yeah, and that's... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we'll see what happens.
And that's the thing with, being asked what we think is going to happen versus what we want to happen. I totally agree. I think that they're going to continue with The Miz in some form or fashion. I personally would rather it be either Owens or Cesaro, for obvious reasons, as Chad has kind of already alluded to. Now, the big main event for this year's SummerSlam was a rematch 14 months in the making, approximately 14 months in the making, from WrestleMania 30, where The Undertaker takes on Brock Lesnar. This match, to me, was confusing again at the end, and I think that I'm not exactly sure where they're going with this, and I'm not going to be overly critical and judgmental of it to wait and see where they go with this, but clearly, The Undertaker did tap when he was caught in Lesnar's, and I can't think of the name of his, the Kimura Lock, I think I'm saying that right. Obviously, The Undertaker tapped, but the referee didn't see it, and it was kind of weird the way they ended that. I don't know exactly what's going on. What were your thoughts? What was your overall impression of this? Because I think we agree, we weren't excited about Undertaker Brock at 30, and 14 months later, I still wasn't. This match did not say order this pay-per-view to me.
No, and I agree. I mean, the match itself was fine. It was what you'd expect. They didn't go out and have necessarily a wrestling match as just kind of a brawl. It was perfectly acceptable up until the ending, and then the ending was, again, it was TNA levels of bad. I think it was hurt by the wrong camera angle for the ending of the match, because you didn't see Undertaker tapping. You just saw Charles Robinson go down for the pin, and then the bell starts to ring.
Mm-hmm.
That was confusing. I asked you why it would be, and then when Charles Robinson is yelling at the timekeeper, don't ring the bell, it's just like, why not say, get up, look at both guys and say, no, the match isn't over, continue. Then you had Heyman and Brock just kind of standing there in the ring waiting for Undertaker to do something. Heyman should have pointed out to Brock that Undertaker was getting up. There should have been some interaction. And it kind of goes back to this Jon Stewart ending where everybody was just kind of standing around waiting for something and not knowing how to actually make it look legitimate. And then you had Undertaker with the low blow and getting Brock into the Devil's Triangle. My biggest fear is now they're going to have another rematch, which, one, I don't want to see. Two, I'm afraid it's going to happen at WrestleMania, and Undertaker will then get his victory back, which I don't want to see. And he'll go into, if that does happen, the fact that they've been building this match as the match too big for WrestleMania, but then the next match could be possibly big enough for WrestleMania, it kind of goes back to the Rock versus Cena once in a lifetime for the second time scenario.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing. I think I said going into this match was a no win situation. Either Undertaker wins and kind of negates Lesnar ending the streak, or Lesnar wins and we're kind of in the same place as we were before the match. But the whole ending was just so convoluted and horrible that it definitely makes me not want to see another match by these guys.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that was going to be my next question for you, is do we get the rubber match at WrestleMania? I'm kind of thinking we're going to, but like you said, I definitely don't want that to happen, but you know, time will tell. We're not going to be overly judgmental. We'll wait and see. Do you want to assign SummerSlam a letter grade? Do you have a grade in mind for it?
I would probably give it like a D+.
Okay. I was going to go C-. I mean, it wasn't horrible. Like I said, I thought that the Cena Rollins match was good.
Yeah. The endings are what you remember.
Yeah.
The ending, what you take away from a show. And the two biggest matches in the show had horrible endings.
You know, and I don't want to, you know, compare day to night or whatever, but a much different feel, a much different vibe the night before on Saturday with the NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn. And correct me if I'm wrong, is this the first TakeOver event to happen outside of the Full Sail University area?
Yes, it is.
And I could not believe, I mean, I can, because it's NXT and it is quite popular, and if you build it, they will come, but that crowd was enormous, and they were hot the whole time, it seemed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious what the attendance difference was between NXT and SummerSlam, since they both took place in the same arena, and allegedly both were sellouts.
Chad's got some construction work going on in parts unknown. Oh, somebody ran into the parking gate. We're just making sure you're not under attack there.
No, yeah. So there's a car alarm going off right now.
Nice.
The joys of city life.
Hey, it's cool. It's cool. The show opened with Jushin Thunder Liger versus Tyler Breeze, the Pretty Prince.
Tyler Perry would have been a better competitor.
Who's that?
Tyler Perry would have been.
I was surprised, and they alluded to this. This was Liger's first WWE appearance. I was really—I'll be honest with you—I was surprised that Liger ended up going over, and Tyler Breeze did not win this one. I think that Breeze has a lot of potential, and you know, Jushin Liger has been around since, gosh, I can remember watching him in the late 80s, early 90s in WCW, so he's been around for quite some time.
Yeah, I remember, I was going to look this up, but didn't. I believe at Super Brawl 2 in 91, I think he took on Brian Pillman.
I was going to say, was that the Brian Pillman match? Yeah.
But I believe the first episode of Nitro, he also took on Brian Pillman.
Yeah, so he's, and I wondered, and I'm assuming it's the same guy under the mask. I mean, you know, obviously, with kind of like how Sin Cara, you could easily put somebody else in there, but he can still really go. And I don't know any of the backstage stuff or what's happening, if he's sticking around, if this was just a one shot opportunity. But it was interesting to see him there, and you know. And I still think, even in defeat, Tyler Breeze looked good.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a fan of guys coming in and going over, because I think it makes your, it kind of cheapens your roster.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess there's a story being told with Tyler Breeze, and my memory for match details is horrible. So I think like the last NXT, whoever Tyler Breeze fought, it was kind of the same thing where Breeze can't get the win, and then he gets frustrated and loses within a matter of minutes afterwards. So maybe it's a character arc that they're setting up for Tyler. But I agree. I think Tyler is very talented. I think he could be the next breakout star, or the next non-indie breakout star for NXT. And we'll see where he goes from this. But yeah, I think it was cool seeing Liger in the WWE ring, but I do think Tyler should have won.
Agreed. And there are, which I'm excited about this because I would say this team is probably my favorite team overall, with maybe the exception of New Day right now, and that is the Vaudevillains, winning the NXT Tag Team Championship.
Yeah, I was excited to see this. Blake and Murphy are still... they're another team that I just don't... They do nothing for me. They're just kind of there. But the Vaudevillains, I have been a fan of since they got together, even before when Aiden English was a solo competitor. I've been a big fan of his. I'm glad to see the Vaudevillains win. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go. Again, who steps up next to be the next challengers after the Blake and Murphy rematch. And bringing out Blue Pants. I mean, that was the crowd. It is amazing how over, as you were saying earlier, the crowd was very hot. I think Blue Pants probably got one of the biggest reactions on the show.
Yeah. And, you know, we're talking about tag teams, and of course, during the course of the evening, Commissioner Steven Regal announced the Dusty Rhodes, I forget the exact verbiage for it, but basically a tag team tournament in honor and memory of Dusty Rhodes. So it'll be interesting to see if they're going to draw, obviously, I'm assuming this is going to go beyond the NXT roster, and they'll bring in other guys.
I haven't read spoilers, but I know they taped stuff before TakeOver, and a couple of names I did see pop up are other indie stars that actually work for other promotions. So I'm curious, and I think somebody else pointed out that this is kind of like the modern day Crockett Cup.
Yeah.
So as an old school fan, I'm excited to see how this plays out.
I totally agree with that. Apollo Crews, and I don't know a whole lot about Apollo Crews, making his, was this his debut?
Yes.
With NXT, beating the Perfect 10, Ty Dillinger. I was impressed with what I saw from Crews.
Yeah, I mean, Crews, formerly known as UHA Nation on the indie scene, I saw him for the first time probably 2 or 3 years ago, and from the first time I saw him, I was like, WWE needs to sign this guy. This guy is money. And so it's good to see him finally in an NXT ring. I thought this match was a little too competitive for what it should have been. It should have been Crews just coming in and kind of squashing Dillinger, and I think Dillinger got a little too much offense in. But mm-hmm. overall, I think it set the foundation for Crews, and barring any injury or wellness test violations or attitude problems, I think the sky's the limit for Apollo Crews.
Looking forward to seeing more of him for sure. Samoa Joe, of course, a part of NXT now, and taking on Baron Corbin. And help me with this one too, Chad. Is Baron Corbin, was he undefeated going into this match?
I believe so, yeah.
And then, of course, I was interested to see where they were going to go, because I'm still not sure how they're going to treat Samoa Joe. And I don't necessarily... And this is no disrespect to NXT. Samoa Joe is one of those guys I felt like could have stepped right into the main roster. But then as I was thinking about it, you know, I think a lot of fans, and myself included, have the mentality that NXT is supposed to be this place strictly for developmental talent. And it doesn't have to be that way. They're going on tour now. They're competing, you know, just as well with the WWE as far as I'm concerned, and they obviously, in my opinion, have a better depth, a talent pool, if you will, of wrestlers, of men and women in the ring. So, you know, Samoa Joe being there as kind of a, perhaps in a leadership role, if you will, I think is a good thing. And him beating Baron Corbin mildly surprised me, but I'm glad to see that it in fact happened.
Yeah, and I mean, I believe Triple H has said that NXT is no longer just a developmental. It is a third brand. It is kind of like what ECW should have been when it was reformed. So, yeah, it's seeing Joe down there, it's interesting because I still don't know if Joe is a full-time WWE employee or if he's going to be, because I know he was doing some indie stuff after he first came into NXT. His match with Corbin was much better than I expected, because Baron Corbin is another one of those guys that just sucks all charisma out of everything around him. He may be something in a few years, but right now, maybe it's because all of his matches have been relatively short,
mm-hmm.
and so he hasn't had a lot to show, but I think this was probably the best match I've seen him in, and I was kind of surprised that Joe picked up the victory, because I would have thought that if they're really behind Baron Corbin and kind of pushing him to be the next star, perhaps let him win and continue that going on. And especially now that he has this attitude of hating the indie guys that are coming in, you think there's something big, and he's like, I don't know who you are. It's it was surprising to see Joe win. Now we'll see, as we've said with most of these matches, where do they go next? That's going to be the big tell.
Yeah. And one of the most impressive matches of the night, still getting a lot of rave reviews online, is Bayley versus Sasha Banks for the NXT Women's Championship. And I like the fact that they still do call this the Women's Championship on NXT. No surprise here that Bayley won. Of course, Sasha Banks a part of the main roster, but we just talked about how you're going to see talent from both the WWE, whether it's Raw and SmackDown, still a part of the NXT shows as well. But this was a great match. These women both, you know, were doing things that you don't typically see in a Divas match. I'm not a huge, and I'm probably going to take heat for this, I am not a huge Bayley fan. I think she's great in the ring. It's the gimmick to me. I haven't bought into it yet. Give me time, and I'm sure I will warm up to it. But I do like the other members of the Four Horsewomen, if you will. And obviously that kind of came out at the end too as well, when all four, you know, Natasha. Gosh, I'm looking right at them. Becky Lynch, Charlotte, Sasha, not Natasha, and Bayley all embraced and gave the symbol. Now, is that an official thing, the Four Horsewomen, or is that just kind of something that has been internet speculated?
I think it's what they call themselves. It's not a on camera.
It's not an established thing, then.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just because they're, I guess, I've all been in NXT together. They're all friends. Like, they're the four, you know, starting this Diva Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't believe you're not a Bayley fan. I had you pegged as a hugger.
It depends on who I'm hugging, I guess.
You know, this match was, I would have liked to have seen this match be the actual main event in the show. I think Bayley winning would have just been the perfect ending to the show. And, I mean, this match, what can you say that hasn't already been said online about this match? It was probably one of the best matches of the year. Just the storytelling was near perfect. How Bayley had the broken hand that Sasha went after, and even when Sasha had the bank statement on, and Bayley was trying to reach the ropes, and Sasha started kicking the hand, You know, it's those little details
mm-hmm.
that really add to a match. And that's where I think if you look at this match and compare it to every match on SummerSlam, you see the night and day in the match layout. I mean, this match was incredible. And if you haven't seen the match, I highly recommend you go back and watch it.
Yeah, I would second that thought.
And then watch the Nikki Bella match and understand why I don't think the Bellas are part of the Diva Revolution.
Yeah. And again, don't get me wrong. I don't want people to think that I have a negative opinion of Bayley. It's just the character hasn't grown on me. Her talent and her ability in the ring, I am completely on board with and impressed with, but it's that character that I haven't connected with at this point. So that takes us to the main event. And Chad, I'm going to let you talk mostly about this because this was the one match that I didn't get to watch all the way through. Of course, Finn Balor is still your NXT champion, though, beating former champ Kevin Owens in a ladder match.
You know, this match, I'll be honest, I didn't pay much attention to it. Because I kind of felt the outcome was never in doubt. I mean, much like the Bayley Sasha match, but I just wasn't invested in the story with Kevin Owens and Finn Balor. Finn Balor is another one of these guys that I just don't understand the appeal. He does nothing for me as a wrestler. I find his demon entrance to be laughable. I texted you, I believe, during the show and said he is like Randy Orton of NXT to me. Although I hate Finn Balor the way I hate Randy Orton. He's just a guy that I don't care to see.
I will disagree with you on that. I am a big fan of Finn Balor. So,
I mean, you know, I watched the behind the scenes piece on Finn Balor before NXT, and he seems like a nice guy. I mean, I don't wish him ill will or anything. Good for him for the success he's had. I find him very bland.
Now, did you like him on the indies or not?
I never really saw him in the indies because he was mainly a Japanese and European wrestler.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've heard his name. I've heard the name Prince Devitt for the past few years, but I never saw him. So this match was just kind of there. What I did like, it's those little things that Kevin Owens does that I think a lot of the people on the main roster need to pay attention to. Going back to Sheamus and Randy Orton, both in their match, Sheamus kind of did a little bit of this. When the fans started chanting, "You look stupid," he got on the mic and said, "I look awesome, respect the Hawk," whatever. But in their match the night after WrestleMania 29, when the fans started, you know, hijacking, they just kept doing what they were set out there to do. They didn't acknowledge the crowd at all. In the Finn Balor Owens match, the fans started doing the ole 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 chant, which was for Sami Zayn for some reason. I don't get the connection. But Owens kind of looked at the crowd and then threw his arms up and acted like he hurt his shoulder, which is how Sami Zayn got injured.
Mm.
Just those little, and it shut the crowd up because the crowd's like, "Oh, yeah, right, he's injured." But it's those little character traits that I think speak volumes in the overall sense of a wrestler. But this match, and I texted you something about the match not being that exciting, and then I lost the feed and missed the ending to the match. So overall, I mean, it was a fine match, but I would have been happier with Bayley and Sasha main eventing.
So yeah, there you have it. It's two nights of wrestling. Okay, you gave SummerSlam a D+. What do you give NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn?
Easy A. I mean, maybe not. I don't know if I give it an A+, but very, very close to. I mean, there was nothing on that show. Even as I just said, I didn't care for the main event. But there was nothing on the show that was terrible, or even anything on the show that I would have been like, oh, you know, you could have cut that from the show and made it, and no one would have missed it. I think it was well plotted. The matches had emotional investment for the most part. They had logical storytelling behind them, and they didn't have any horrible finishes.
Yeah, I agree. I would give it an A as well. Two very good, or one very good show, and one, you know, it was there. Considering it's one of the original Big Four, you know, SummerSlam was what it was. But of course, Raw coming up, we'll have to see if some of our speculations happen over the next couple of weeks, and of course, leading us to Night of Champions. And we're just about out of time, Chad, but you're heading to the King of Trios for Chikara Pro, is that right?
Yes, that will be not this coming weekend, but the weekend after, September 4th, 5th, and 6th. Will be my first King of Trios live. Looking forward to it. The reunion of the BWO, the Bullet Club with AJ Styles and the Young Bucks, along with Chikara regulars. You know, hopefully catch up with Dasher Hatfield and Oliver, or Jervis Cottonbelly. And it should be a really fun weekend of shows. And hopefully I can get it done in time. There will be blogs promoting the first round of the tournament and kind of promoting those. So, got that coming up. And then we'll... possibly doing the Raw in Baltimore on Labor Day. So
busy couple weeks coming up,
yes.
At least several days coming up for you, and you will keep us posted, I'm sure, via Facebook and Twitter, at My123Cents on Twitter, and Facebook, the same address. Just look for My123Cents. Anything else you want to say before we wrap this up?
I'm curious to see how Brock Lesnar's going to get suspended tonight to take him off TV for a while.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. Everybody, thanks so much for listening to My123Cents, the podcast. Again, if you ever want to support the show, head on over to Amazon and use the links to that are on the My123Cents.com page, or, of course, over at JitteryMonkey.com. And thanks for listening to us via iTunes. Be sure to rate us, share us, whatever it is you do over at iTunes. I'm old and don't get all this stuff, so we appreciate you listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to JitteryMonkey.com.